And then this is a very important thing to reflect upon, which says in The Precious Garland by Nagarjuna, that the self is not the water, earth, or fire, wind, and nor is it something distinct or separate from these four or six elements. And and then they, then in the end it says that where is this self then? So now Nagarjuna, in order to give the answer as to in what way the self exists, then he says that so this self is something, this self of the person, the mode of existence of that is by way of mere designation based or by way of dependence on some other factors. And then it is explicitly stated by Chandrakirti in his text, Supplement to the Middle Way, which says that the self is not something non-existent, but the mode of existence is very different from the independent mode of existence. But that is by way of mere designation on the six different elements which form the basis of designation of the self. So, just as we have now realized that this self is something, mere designation, which is not at all findable or pointable objectively among the various parts, nor as distinct from the parts. And just on that basis, we now understand that this self is not independently or intrinsically existent. And just as this self is lacking intrinsic existence, if you undertake the same kind of analysis with these six different elements, like the earth, water, fire, element, consciousness, and space, so we realize that each of these elements again lack intrinsic existence, because they themselves are once again are composed of various parts, their own different parts. So as such, by following the same kind of analysis, we see that even these aggregates or even these six different elements, they lack true existence, which is not at all findable or pointable among its own different parts, or as distinct from these different parts. And then, in support as to how these physical aggregates lack true existence, it's because that they are basically composed of their own different components or parts. And then, if you try to disintegrate the things that way, we see that there is nothing which isn't with any parts. As such, since that whatever it is, as long as it is a particle, it must be composed of various parts. Because it is composed of various parts, we see that each of these parts is not that whole, nor the whole is something distinct from this part. So we then see that whatever is something, a physical thing that we can think of, it lacks intrinsic or true existence, something a quality of pointability. So then, in support to support the idea that everything we can think of in terms of physical things, it should have its own various parts. So the kind of the logic applied here is that, say, if you think of a kind of a particle or atom which isn't in possession of any further parts, so if this is the case, then the reason has it that if you touch from the right side or from the east, it should also as well, the moment you touch the eastern side of the particle, it should as well touch the western side. So if that is the case, then they will see, we will see that this part, this particle, the surface of the particle, the polished particle, won't have any kind of length or any kind of space in between, because as soon as you try to touch the eastern side, it also touches the western side. So whereas if you say that, it is not happening, if you touch the eastern side, it does not necessarily entail that you should be touching the western side. So here then, you are trying to make two kind of parts, the western part and the eastern part. So as such, again, that soul claimed as the part of the particle also has to be posited as something in possession of different parts. And whereas if you still claim unto the idea that there is no parts with this part of the particle, so there then you have to come to a kind of accept a kind of enormous absurdity as to say that the entire by combining two such parts particles, these two will not grow in size, because the moment you touch the western side of the one particle and eastern side of the second particle, so the two should really conflate each other. Because the two sides, the eastern and western side, they should be, whenever you touch the eastern side, it should necessarily touch the western side. This means that the first particle should conflate with the second. Likewise, however many particles you try to add to those two particles, you'll see that there's no growing in size, are constantly conflating with the previous particles. It is because of this that, and if you still say that no, it is true, then you have to accept that there is no gross particles as the planet, the gross kind of physical things as the planet, sun, and so forth. Because however many particles you try to add, it will not grow in size because of this basic premise that things are partless. So, this is the kind of logic employed to prove that everything that you can think of in terms of physical things, it must be something which is composed of further parts. If that is the case, again, through by law of employing the logic as set forth in the Precious Garland by Nagarjuna, saying that the whole thing cannot be traceable to among the different parts of that whole, nor can that be traceable as distinct from these parts. As such, since that it does not exist objectively, so pointable objectively, so the only thing that you have to say is that it exists by way of designation as opposed to the objective existence. If that is the case, then you have to equally say that there is no independent solid existence from each side. So that absence of the independent existence or objective existence is called emptiness. So by following that kind of logic, you can establish the absence of intrinsicality, absence of independent existence in whatever instant of thing that you can think of. As I said earlier, although the selflessness of person versus the selflessness of phenomena, the two don't differ in terms of subtlety, but in terms of the order of establishing the concept or the view of selflessness on the person and on the phenomena, first would be establishing the selflessness of person. And then in the text, it also says that the selflessness, when I think of this concept of selflessness on top, taking the eyes, ears, and so forth as a basis, and that is relatively more subtle as compared to the selflessness of selflessness established on the on more grosser objects as the image of the image or reflection on the mirror. So so then you may wonder as to what is this explanation, how to really explicate the statement that the emptiness can be more easily established are taking the image on the mirror as a basis rather than taking the eyes and ears as a basis for establishing the emptiness. So the kind of reason or the explanation given in the great exposition of the stages of path and enlightenment, the one composed by Lama Tsongkhapa. So there he says that when you speak about the emptiness of the image or the reflection on the mirror, so it does not actually imply, it doesn't mean, it does not refer to the actual emptiness of the image on the mirror. Rather, it simply has the connotation of the absence of that image to be the actual thing whose image that is formed on the mirror. So say, if you're an image of a tree, so it is actually saying that the kind of the emptiness that is set, that is established, that is spoken of in relation to the image of the tree on a mirror. So in that text, it simply refers to the emptiness of that image as the actual tree, and not the emptiness of the intrinsicality or the emptiness of the inherency. So, from that perspective, definitely establishing the emptiness of that image to be the actual tree will be much grosser as compared to establishing the emptiness of the eyes as intrinsic existence. So that is the kind of the explanation given in the great exposition of the stages of the stages on a path to path of enlightenment. And where is the kind of explanation which is given by Gunjan Jamin Shepa? So he said that the emptiness, when you try to establish the emptiness of anything, like on the eyes, ears, whatever, so you use the kind of syllogism, saying that the eyes and ears, they lack true existence because they are dependent origination, and the kind of example given would be the image, image of a tree or image of a vase on a mirror. So there, then what Gunjan Jamin Shepa, he said, is that when you first try to think about how everything which is dependent originated is lacking true existence, so he first one is advised to do that by taking the image of the mirror as an example, by saying that just as this image of the mirror is lacking the nature of the true tree, so similarly things do not exist as intrinsically. And then through such kind of reflection, eventually the person will, instead of establishing emptiness on the eyes and ears first, so he will first establish the emptiness, the actual emptiness of intrinsicality, taking the basis of the image itself. So from that perspective, definitely the person first obtains the understanding of emptiness by taking the image of the mirror first. And then after that, he extends the same kind of logic to the eyes and ears and so forth. So, when I speak about how everything is mere nomination, everything is mere designation, it doesn't mean that that thing does not exist at all. Although it seems like it is a connotation of the absence of that. But, however is the case that the thing is mere nomination or mere designation, but the thing is that there must be some kind of basis which should be that mere nomination, which should be that mere designation. But although things, they are mere nomination or designation, but when they appear to our consciousness, and they do not at all appear to be as mere nomination or mere designation, rather they appear to be having in possession a characteristic of intrinsic reality or true reality. So then how should we really discover or unravel the reality that things and events, including self, do not exist intrinsically? So then it said that, so these very aggregates which form the self, which constitute the self, do not exist inherently, because that these aggregates don't exist inherently or intrinsically, the self which is designated upon these aggregates as well lacks true existence or intrinsic existence. So then it cites, Lama Tsongkhapa cites a sutra which says that the self or the person is merely designated upon the various aggregates. It is because of this that the self lacks true existence, just as a chariot is a mere designation, designated upon the various parts of the chariot.